Good evening, and welcome to What the World Needs Now, with host Ken Johnston. Stay tuned as Ken talks with authors, journalists, and others regarding topics important to us as Catholics in a world that's in desperate need of God's love. Love that comforts
from heaven above. And good evening and welcome to What the World Needs Now. There's your host, Ken Johnston. I want to praise and thank God for all of our listeners and thank you for all that you do for us here at In His Sign Catholic Radio. Both your prayerful and financial support that's kept us on the air for over 40 years now. Certainly appreciate it, and it's what allows me to be here on Wednesday afternoon. Just a quick reminder that if you're signed up to play in our annual golf outing, that's been rescheduled from October the 13th to this coming Monday, October the 27th, out at Old York Road Country Club. I'll be out there on Monday. I look forward to seeing all of you out there as well. It should be a great day, as it usually is, and hopefully the weather will cooperate this week, unlike it did a couple of weeks ago. I'm going to be joined in this segment by Carolyn McKinney. She's a Catholic wife, mother, and business owner. Welcome to the show, Carolyn. It's great to have you with us.
Thanks so much, Ken.
And Sophia, who is in touch with us on a regular basis, had passed along a couple of articles that you wrote, one for Catholic Exchange, What I Hope My Sons Will Learn from the Life of Charlie Kirk, and then another one for Crisis called Liberalism Died with Charlie Kirk. And so it's interesting to me that I think Charlie Kirk gets talked about more today than he did before the tragic event of September 10th. It seems like more and more people have learned about him and are talking about him. It's almost like those that perpetrated the event, it kind of backfired, didn't it?
Yeah, I think a lot of these types of situations tend to do that, honestly, because Charlie has in many ways kind of become a martyr for the people on the right, because he really was not the odious person that the left makes him out to be. And even a lot of moderate esteems online have come to, you know, watch some Charlie Kirk videos and realize that you know, the left's been kind of lying about him being Hitler and a Nazi. And although they still are perpetuating and believing these lies, unfortunately, you know, we take a look at the aftermath of the No Kings rally from last weekend, and there are still people out there, you know, celebrating his death. It's quite alarming that so many people are so caught up in this lie that really affects our the national kind of social cohesion and our social fabric. You know, how can we be one country if there is so much animosity from one side to the other? It's a very difficult question that we are all needing to grapple with.
Yeah, no, I've got my own ideas, and you know, there's powers that be obviously that benefit from the exact situation that we find ourselves in, and as long as there's conflict, they think that there's going to be a need for them. But the fact that people were celebrating, you know, the murder of a guy who basically just challenged people on what they believed, and I think there were, you know, centuries before us where you had the, you know, thinkers like Aristotle and Augustine and these others. That's what they did. They challenged beliefs to see if what they believed were true, you know, was true. And today that seems to, you know, no longer be. It's, you know, if I'm on this side, I have to believe this. And if I'm on that side, I have to believe what they teach or talk about. But, you know, God forbid anybody challenges your own beliefs.
Yeah, I think part of this is tribalism, as in, you know, I think human beings are tribal in many ways. It's kind of baked into who we are. And if we're not tribal in an actual community, you know, a physical community like a clan or a church or something like that, there's become these kind of tribal ideologies, right? It's tribalism, the ideological form, and in some ways, in many ways, the politics has become the religion of a lot of people in America. And so they have this religious fervor about these political beliefs as well, which makes it even more dangerous, I think, especially when it's, you know, coupled with this violent rhetoric. And I don't know whether they don't know what they're actually saying. You know, do they not realize the gravity of this? Or do even the kind of the normal people who are espousing these at, or I say normal, but the people at the No Kings rally that are espousing these, you know, very violent rhetoric, do they really understand what it means for someone to be murdered? Or is this just some kind of avatar? Is this a result of, you know, technology and you know, a desensitization to violence, or, you know what I mean? It's hard to kind of parse through some of these issues. But the reason that I wrote the articles really was for me to make sense of some things that were happening, but also, you know, I was very concerned in the aftermath, in the immediate aftermath of Charlie Kirk's assassination, that there would be, you know, a severe kind of backlash among the right, and this perhaps initial reaction to perhaps, you know, responded violence themselves. And so I wanted to make sure, especially that I was passing along to my teenage sons, that, you know, this is what we need to take from the life of Charlie Kirk, and that in he was a Christian first, and he told the truth, and he treated people with respect, even those who disagreed with them. And, you know, he was really a very charitable guy and a very driven guy. And, you know, he wanted people's lives to be better. And so, you know, remember Charlie for all these good things, and he would not be condoning violence. The reason that he was saying these things, you know, doing what he was doing, is because he was concerned that the space between the sides was going to create the violence, right? If we don't talk to each other anymore, it makes it all the more likely that violence will ensue. And so, you know, he was trying to get rid of the very circumstances that led to his death. So anyway, but I think I'm very heartened that in the weeks after, you know, there was just this really intense kind of call to prayer and to Christian action and a very peaceful response and you know, almost like a reawakening in some cases, in a lot of cases, people going back to church. And it's a very encouraging reaction from the right that I was very pleased about. And so what little part I could play pointing to virtue and, you know, asking my young people to be, you know, peaceful and virtuous, you know, I was happy to kind of play that role too. But, you know, I'm grateful that we can still respond in a way that is good and virtuous, even in the face of, you know, an enemy, or not even an enemy, but an entrenched minority that is, you know, violent and very angry.
Yeah, and like you said, they're really not an enemy. They're a confused bunch, and you know, one of the points that came across was where we talk about forgiveness, right? And like you said, they wanted to, you know, one of the natural human response will be to retaliate. That, you know, and it doesn't have to be to kill somebody. A lot of times, our first reaction in situations is to retaliate, and it doesn't have to necessarily be a violent thing. But as you were talking, you know, what came to mind was, in a lot of ways, Charlie Kirk is a martyr, right? He died for what he believed in, and as we said, you know, more people are talking about him today than they ever would have if he were still alive. And I was thinking about some of the folks on and I don't like using left and right, but the the liberal side, perhaps, that, you know, they've tried to turn into martyrs, and they've come and gone, and nobody's talking about them today. And I think that one of the reasons for that is the amount of forgiveness that came from Erica immediately, and some of the more well-known people. I mean, they get it that retaliating and violence is not going to fix it, but to turn around within days and let people know that you forgive the person that killed your husband and killed your children's father is it's an act of God, right? I would mention it, I did a show just before this one, and to err is human and to forgive is divine. And that there's godliness when we forgive anybody. It's not natural, to forgive, right? And so that you saw some of this as well?
Yes, for sure. Not long after, I told some of my friends that I really pray that Erica can find it to forgive, her husband's killer publicly, because that is, and I'm so glad that she did, because, I can only imagine how incredibly difficult that was for her. But it is such an impactful Christian witness. Like, I can't imagine any bigger witness in this situation than Erica Kirk forgiving her husband's killer. Like, that is unconscionable to people who are not Christian or are even nominally Christian, right? Because, like you said, that our first human reaction is retaliation, and forgiveness is divine. And so, I think this just was a testament to how Christians act differently in our culture, right? And again, I don't think non-Christians can, that is so foreign to them, but it is something I think that makes them take notice that, oh, there is something different about Christians, and that's good, because it's been so many years we're in this post-Christian culture, but everybody still thinks that America is a Christian country. Well, maybe not in the past 5 to 10 years, but for many, many decades, we were still considered a Christian country, even though we were clearly a very post-Christian culture. And so, I think we're finally to the point where, we can kind of distinguish ourselves as Christians from, what people think Christianity is, right? Like, they have this concept of what Christians are that doesn't necessarily purport to what Christians actually are. And so, I think maybe there's enough, our culture is far enough gone from Christian teaching or Christian culture to actually start kind of standing out for Christ again, so I don't know. I think there's a lot for Christians to grapple with now too, in going out and trying to save our culture again. And, how do we be those witnesses? How do we set ourselves apart? And it takes a little bit more counterculturalism than past generations have had to deal with in America. But I think that's good for us,
No, I agree. It's time for Christians to live as Christians. And in some ways, I think we wait for, a hero to come along that's going to lead some great movement that's going to make that happen. And I've had Jason Jones on probably about a year ago, and he wrote a book called The Great Response to the Great Reset. And I was expecting to read about some movement or, set of guidelines that a big group was going to use in order to, combat things that were going on. And the bottom line is it's one person at a time. I've seen signs around on social media now, everybody is Charlie Kirk. Mm-hmm. And so while we may not be able to start a movement like Turning Point USA or run a movement like that, a lot of times, like you said you were doing, just talking to your own kids and the people in your immediate circle, if we can have a little bit of influence over that, and there's a whole lot of people that are doing that, the culmination of it, I think, could be a great thing.
Absolutely. And, you know, I think this is really a place where mothers can have a huge impact. I mean, fathers, of course, as well. We need, you know, strong husbands and fathers in homes. There's been way too much undisciplined children and all that kind of thing. But I think that, you know, this cultural moment where we have, you know, we've been told as women that motherhood is, you know, subpar or suboptimal, you know, career is where it's at, and you need, you know, you can really make a name for yourself if you accomplish worldly things, and don't think about being a mother. You know, all these things have denigrated motherhood so much, and what most women don't realize is that we have given up so much of our cultural power, right? It used to be, like, the women are the ones that primarily shape the next generation, and rather than using that cultural power and shaping our children the way they need to go, we delegate often our responsibilities to, you know, the school or the parish or whatever. And, you know, I really hope that women realize in this cultural moment that they, more than anyone, can have a huge impact on the direction of our country just by, you know, being more present and more engaged in their kids' lives. You know, worry more about your children than your job. And America can, you know, have this great future ahead of her. You know, if us mothers would just reclaim this cultural power that we used to have and we can have again, you know?
Yeah, and so that's what you talk about when you're talking about the cultural reconstruction.
Yeah, exactly. In my crisis article on liberalism is dead, or died with Charlie Kirk, you know, basically one of the things that I pointed out is, you know, we have liberalism has kind of ruled in our country for a long time, right? Liberalism as in the classic idea of liberalism, not like, you know, what Rush Limbaugh used to call Democrats. and liberalism, you know, it was running off the moral capital of Christianity, family, and community, but it couldn't sustain itself, right? Our founding fathers in America talked about the need for virtue and a virtuous citizenry in order to maintain our system of government, right? And this and liberalism kind of prized some good things like free speech, but also like tolerance became kind of the greatest good, but tolerance of anything, including of evil, right? And that's kind of how we've gone so far morally off track. You know, that's how we are in 2020, you know, chopping off kids' body parts, you know, and you know, leading them down this path because everything, even evil, is tolerated, right? But my point in this was, we need to rebuild virtue in our society, and we also can't tolerate evil, right? We need to kind of shake off this idea of tolerance as the highest social good, and we need to realize that tolerating evil harms our children and our society, right? And so we need to speak and act in godly and good ways. We need to recover older wisdom, which is intolerance of evil and shame of dishonor are not vices, but they're essential safeguards of a healthy community, right? So if we continue to tolerate every bad behavior, we're going to continue to have significant social problems, right? And I'm not suggesting like a government solution here or more laws or whatever. I'm just talking about, you know, in our own lives. Like, if my child is, my adult child even, is engaging in behaviors that are inconsistent with our faith or inconsistent with his call to be to a Christian, as a Christian, I need to call him out on that, right? I need to let him know that we do not tolerate this behavior in our family, in our country, as Christians, you know. And I think that even extends to, you know, maybe your friend is in need of some correction because she's doing something that is, bad for her family or her marriage or whatever. We need to be more vocal when it comes to, in being intolerant of evil, if that makes any sense.
No, it does. It does, because I think, like you said, we've become tolerant to a fault. And, you know, and as long as another person's behavior isn't directly impacting me, it's like, oh, let them keep doing it. But enough of them keep doing it, we end up where we are.
The reality is culture can't survive if it chooses tolerance over moral clarity.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. And in the crisis article, when I was going through it, there's two great quotes in there. The one from John Adams, where our Constitution was made only for a moral and religious people. It is wholly inadequate to the government of any other. And then with Washington in his farewell address, of all the dispositions and habits which leads to political prosperity, religion and morality are indispensable supports. So, like you were saying, we're a Christian country, or a country founded on Christian ideas, and obviously that means that we're a moral people and religious to some degree, or at least believe that there's something out there that's got everybody's best interest at heart in a religious way. That without that, left to our own devices, what was established here in this country is not going to be enough to keep us alive.
Yeah. And honestly, you know, a lot of recent decades, you know, in the 20th century, there was this kind of whitewashing of the public square, trying to, secularize everything, remove Christianity from the public square, and really relegate religion to a private role only, right? Like you go and you can worship in your church, but don't talk to us about religion outside of that building, right?
Yeah, yeah.
But the reality is that even in many of the early state constitutions and some that survives, talk specifically about the education being necessary, education and virtue specifically to be necessary. Like, I'm in New Hampshire. The New Hampshire state constitution has specific provisions about the legislature needing to cherish the education in virtue. And it talks about like, civic virtues that need to be inculcated in citizens, right? This is what the founders set up was right. Not a sanitized public square like we have allowed to come to pass in this country, right? We need to recover their wisdom and realize that this only works if we, as a people, can refound virtue in our families and in our communities. And, you know, this also goes to like high trust societies and, you know, that type of thing. The more we can inject integrity into our culture, the better we're going to be. You know, when we ignore virtue, when we allow our culture to devolve, everything just ends up devolving into chaos, and then you don't have liberty at all, right? You have chaos. Anarchy liberty cannot exist in anarchy.
Right.
And that's kind of where we're headed if we don't turn things around. And again, I don't think this is a government solution. This is an individual solution. This is, you know, Jordan Peterson saying, make your own bed, or even, you know, Pope Benedict talking about how the future of the church is, you know, a smaller, more devoted number of parishioners, you know, that type of thing. So it's going to start in the homes. It's going to start in the churches, in the communities, but we have to start, right? And I know a lot of people, including our family, we're doing what we can already and have been this whole time. And so we just need to maybe teach those who aren't doing it on how to do it, right? How are we inculcating virtue in our children? How are we setting, you know, a bar high for our kids? And how are we using discipline in our home? Gasp, right? Because so many families just aren't even disciplining their children at all. So I think there's a lot of things that need to be done, but it all starts in our homes, I think.
Amen. Our guest in this segment is Carolyn McKinney. She's a writer and has written articles for Catholic Exchange at CatholicExchange.com and for Crisis Magazine, CrisisMagazine.com. Anywhere else people can find you, or is that the two main spots?
That's the two main, yes.
Very good. You can look her up on those two sites. Gab, just a minute before we got to go to a break. Anything you wanted to say before we have to let you go?
I'm just grateful to Catholic Exchange and Crisis Magazine. They're such great outlets and well worth reading every day. They're a great place for Catholics to share our thoughts on the faith and how we raise our families and how we can, you know, be citizens in America and all these kind of great things. So I can't say enough about them, and I hope all your listeners will go check them out.
Very good. Carolyn, thanks so much for taking time out of your busy schedule to be with us. We'll keep an eye out on those sites, and maybe we'll get you back when you publish some more articles, okay?
Great. Thank you so much, Ken.
No, thank you. Take care and God bless. Bye-bye. A lot of info to chew on, and especially in light of events over the last month or so. We have reached the bottom of the hour, so we're going to take a short break. And when we come back, we'll be hearing read and talk about the gospel from Mass today. Don't go away. We'll be right back.
We thank God for our one, holy, Catholic, and Apostolic Church, where Jesus remains present to us until the end of the age, in word and in sacrament. Catholic Radio shares in the ministry of the Church to proclaim the gospel to the ends of the earth, and in his sign Catholic Radio has been doing so for over 30 years. Kathleen McCarthy and In His Sign have been empowered by the Holy Spirit to bring the fire of God's healing love to the world through Catholic Radio and the Internet. With God's grace, His word goes out, healing hearts and transforming lives. In His Sign proclaims the culture of life loud and clear in a culture of death. The ministry's mission is to evangelize, catechize, and to be a voice for those who have no voice, proclaiming the truth that will set all people free. To our faithful family and friends who stand with us, thank you for being missionaries with us by supporting In His Sign Catholic Radio. Without your monthly support of prayer and financial giving, our mission would not be able to continue. Our mission voice would be silenced. To our new listeners, please prayerfully consider joining our monthly circle of family and friends by partnering with us financially each month. All donations are completely tax deductible and go directly to our daily expenses, like the purchase of radio airtime and keeping the lights on. Kathleen McCarthy and all of the staff at In His Sign, except Kathleen's administrator, donate all of their time and talent on a volunteer basis at no expense to the ministry. Donations to In His Sign Catholic Radio may be sent to 136 Garrett Avenue, Rosemont, PA 19010. Or you can donate securely at inhissign.com. Remember, without your prayers and financial support, our mission voice will be silenced.
And welcome back to What the World Needs Now, your host Ken Johnston. And again, thank you for all that you do for us here at In His Sign Catholic Radio. I certainly appreciate it, and look forward to seeing you all out at Old York Road Country Club on Monday morning. I guess we'll gather and then play golf in the afternoon and then break bread at dinner. Make sure you bring along a few extra dollars for the silent auction and raffles and all that good stuff. Should be a great day. I was initially told that Carolyn, who was with us in the first segment, was going to be with us for the hour, and unfortunately that did not happen. So I thought we'll at least start the segment with the reading of the gospel from Mass today. And there was an option, right? Today is the feast of St. John Paul II. For those of us that are adults, he was probably the Pope for the bigger part of our lives. You know, going back to the late 70s up until 2005, I think it was, or 2006. And, you know, for a long time, probably half my life, he was the Pope. So we celebrate his feast day today. And the gospel for the Mass that celebrates that memorial is taken from the 21st chapter of St. John, verses 15 to 17. And it reads, "After Jesus had revealed himself to his disciples and eaten breakfast with them, he said to Simon Peter, 'Simon, son of John, do you love me more than these?' Simon Peter answered him, 'Yes, Lord, you know that I love you.' Jesus said to him, 'Feed my lambs.' He then said to Simon Peter a second time, 'Simon, son of John, do you love me?' Simon Peter answered him, 'Yes, Lord, you know that I love you.' He said to him, 'Tend my sheep.' He said to him the third time, 'Simon, son of John, do you love me?' Peter was distressed that he had said this to him a third time, 'Do you love me?' And he said to him, 'Lord, you know everything. You know that I love you.' Jesus said to him, 'Feed my sheep.'" The Gospel of the Lord. And praise to you, Lord Jesus Christ. There's a couple verses that go on after that. So, I just want to include them here because it's sort of a prophecy for Peter. Jesus follows up and he goes on to say, "Amen, amen, I say to you, when you were younger, you used to dress yourself and go where you wanted, but when you grow old, you will stretch out your hands and someone else will dress you and lead you where you do not want to go." He said this, signifying by what kind of death he would glorify God. And when he had said this, he said to him, "Follow me." So this account in John's gospel takes place after the resurrection, if I'm not mistaken, in the verses before it, Jesus is on the beach there, and they had been fishing, and they come off, and he's got a charcoal fire going in which he's making breakfast for the apostles, and they recognize him in that. And so We talked a bit about it at our prayer group this morning, and talking about the original writings of this. Obviously, wasn't written in English the first go around. Wasn't even written in Latin. It would, you know, would have come from the Greek and the various terms for the word love, and you know, especially in our English language, we have one word love, but it's got so many different meanings. You know, you've got marital love, you have the love between family members, you have the love that exists between friends, and sometimes we throw the word around a little loosely. But here, you know, Jesus is really trying to emphasize the seriousness and the importance of what love is. And I remember going to a 12-step meeting years ago, and I went with my wife, and she was not in recovery. There was they call them anniversary meetings. So, you know, a group will start on a certain date, and then some groups every year will celebrate the anniversary of that founding date, and they'll bring food, and they may bring in a speaker that normally doesn't go to that meeting, and it's kind of a big deal. And the group that I, my primary group that I went to, a bunch of us guys, we would bring our wives to that anniversary meeting. And this particular year, the speaker told his story, and he talked a lot about love. And it was one of the rare anniversary meetings where they actually had people sharing from the floor. Now, I was early in recovery at the time, and all this talk about love and love this and love that. And now I have my wife sitting next to me. We've been married for 4 years or so. And I shared that I didn't know what love was until I had gotten sober, had gotten into recovery. Well, I've been married for a couple of years when that happened. And we go out to the car after, and I'm getting a hairy eyeball, and I'm like, what's the matter? And what do you mean you didn't know what love was until you got sober? You know, we were married for a couple of years before that. And I think even 30 years later, that was probably close to 30 years ago, I think today my idea of what love is even way different than it was 30 years ago. It's an evolving, and I think that that's part of what Jesus was trying to drive home here with Peter. You know, what kind of love do you really have for me? Are you willing to lay down your life for me? And, you know, that's what, that's why I wanted to read the last couple verses there of what Jesus goes on to tell Peter. You know, basically, you're going to die the same way I did, except, oh, by the way, instead of being heads up, you're going to be heads down and crucified. And Peter was willing to do that because of how much he loved our Lord. And he may not have known it then, but I'm certain that he would have received all the grace he needed in order to experience his own crucifixion. And all of us, to some degree or another, are called to be crucified. And that doesn't mean we're going to have nails put through our hands and feet and what have you. But to crucify the self that's in each one of us. And it can be a long, long process. And there's some people that'll be buried as selfish, that, you know, as selfish in death as they were in life. And it's why I say that it's been an evolving over the years. I remember, you know, learning like a definition of love was that, you know, doing something just because it's the right thing to do. And we human beings are an interesting lot. We have no problem doing things when the reward is great, right? So we don't mind going to work because we know that we're going to get paid on Friday. It may not be enough for what we think we should get. Maybe some people are in a position where they're getting way more than they think they deserve. If that happens for you, that's great. But I remember always wanting to help people move. back in the day, because when the move was done, there was always a party afterwards, right? Alcohol, food, what have you. So I didn't mind helping people move. But sooner or later, I came to realize that I like to do things because it's just the right thing to do, or because it's going to make somebody else happy, and even more importantly, filled with joy. And that's part of why, you know, preparing for and coming to the radio on Wednesdays, you know, there's always a thing in your mind that, you know, you're doing something good, and there can be a little bit of pride in it. I never thought I would be doing this. But like when Frank called in the first hour and said how much he was getting out of that show at 4 o'clock, that's a big deal to me, we don't always hear from people, and I don't want the phone to ring off the hook. That's not why I'm saying this, but we don't always hear the impact that we have on other people. I think it's a great way that God uses in order to keep our pride in check. If people were always telling us how great we did or the good things that we did, you know, we get all puffed up and start to think that it's us that's doing it and not God doing it through us. But being able to just do the right thing, to bring joy to somebody else's life. And that joy, we talked about before, that joy is something that can't be taken away. We can bring short-term happiness into people's lives. We can do little things or even big things that'll, you know, make them happy for a short period of time. But when we get an opportunity to bring true joy, and I think that that's part of what our Catholic faith is about, and what we were talking about with Carol McKinney in the last segment and the articles that she wrote about the aftermath of Charlie Kirk's assassination, that by witnessing to other people, by loving them through fraternal correction, whether it's family or friends, that we do it not just to straighten them out, but because we know that there's a joy that it'll bring if they get their lives back on track. Being able to work in an addiction ministry and play a small part in helping people find their way back to the Lord is something beyond my wildest dreams. To be able to come here every Wednesday and host shows for a couple of hours that can seriously impact people's lives for the better, it helps me when I put my head on the pillow at night and realize that, you know, we do things that God wants us to do. Going back to that, the 4 o'clock hour when we were talking about making a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God. When we do that, we're actually able to not only find joy for ourselves, but bring joy to other people. And there was the whole message of the gospel, I think, is to bring that about, to realize how much we're loved, to realize that there is joy and forgiveness and mercy and all those other virtues are available to us. And once we accept them and receive them, we have the ability to share them with other people. We get the ability to forgive. We get the ability to have mercy for other people. We get the ability to love divinely. And so all the more reason to delve into the faith and grow in that relationship with God, learn what it is that he really talked about. The other thing that comes out of this gospel, so it's three times Jesus asks Peter if he loves him, and it kind of undoes the three level denial that Peter exhibits during the passion, right? So if I'm not mistaken, there's two occurrences of a charcoal fire in the gospel, and one of them is the charcoal fire that's burning outside the palace or temple, and you know, Peter's standing beside the fire to keep warm, and as my good friend Bill Wynn pointed out, I think a couple of weeks ago when we were talking about Rene Girard, that there was a good-looking girl that was at the fire where Peter was. It wasn't an older, not-so-good-looking woman, but a young a young woman that was attractive. And so Peter wanted to be a part of. He didn't want to be pointed out as being a follower of Christ, because he wanted to go along with the crowd and go along with this this woman. And so he's standing by the charcoal fire, and three times she mentions things that would have identified him as a follower of Christ, and three times Peter denies it. Now they're out fishing, and they come in from a night of fishing because they had given up and gone back to their old ways. And they bring the boats on shore. They hop off, and what's going on the beach? But another charcoal fire. And on that fire, Jesus is actually making breakfast for the disciples. And here comes the three questions of love that undoes Peter's three denials. And it's such a beautiful moment, I think, in Scripture to realize that Jesus had already forgiven Peter, right? He knew ahead of time. He told Peter before it ever happened that Peter was going to deny him. And, of course, Peter says, no, Lord, I'll never deny you. I'll follow you everywhere you go. And we may have done that in our own lives, whether it's been with God or spouses or kids or, really good friends that we've had where, we've told them we would go to the ends of the earth and we would do anything that they needed us to do. And then when the opportunity arises, we sometimes fall short. I know I did. And, being asked to do something and, yeah, okay. And then I would either never get around to it or get around to it when I felt like it. And so it's kind of how my life has changed in the last 7 months or so. You know, when somebody in your life dies, a parent, a spouse, perhaps a child, and you realize that we really only have the moment that we're living in right now. I know I've mentioned over the past few months that I used to subscribe to the idea of living one day at a time, and I still do for the most part, because we can't live more than one day at a time. I can't. Today's October 22nd. October 21st is long gone. I can't do anything about what happened yesterday. It's already done, gone, in the books. I can learn from it, but I can't change any of it. And tomorrow's going to be October 23rd, and it's not here yet, and I can't do anything that's going to take place tomorrow. I can't do it today. Now, I can have a to-do list, and there can be 20 things on it, and I can get them all done today or maybe push some of those things to tomorrow, but I can't do what's planned for tomorrow today for the most part, whether it's appointments, meetings for work, family events, whatever it is. I can't live it until it actually gets here. I can only live today. But the main lesson over this year has been that we really can only live in the moment, you know. Been here since 4 o'clock, an hour and 50 minutes. And what's happened for the first hour and 49 minutes is gone. I can't go back and grab any of that time back. I can't redo it. Can talk about it, make apologies or reparations for anything I may have done in that hour and 49 minutes that I shouldn't have done, but I can't go back and relive it or change it. I can only do what I do in the moment. And so, trying to not waste moments anymore and to take care of whatever it is that God has put right in front of me. And it's a beautiful thing. I had an opportunity, and I probably shared about this last week, if I did, forgive me, but an opportunity to share with a relatively large group about just that, and how the most important person in the world, or the most important people in the world, are the ones that are in front of you right now. And so I sit here on Wednesday afternoons, and I've got Patrick here with me on the other side of the glass and Maureen in the other room. And I really have no idea how many people out there are listening or watching, right? We have this thing on Facebook Live now. I know I don't promote it a lot, but If you ever want to see, if you've never seen what I look like and you want to, you can go on Facebook and join the In His Sign Catholic Radio website or Facebook page. And we broadcast all the shows live over over Facebook. But, you know, you can see me, but I can't see you. And so right now you're the most important people in my life. For whatever reason, God has seen fit that in this moment right now, that this is what I've been called to do, my vocation, if you will. And so by fulfilling that vocation and showing up here on time like I'm supposed to and doing a little bit of preparation, you know, hopefully what I'm doing is of God and helps at least a few people out there that are listening. But, you know, 7 minutes from now, the show's over, we'll wrap up, I'll get in the car, and, you know, I've got a stop to make, I think, on the way home and help a couple of people there before I go home to my black lab and have some dinner. But when I'm in situations now and it's whoever's right in front of me is the most important person. Years ago, I was in a class at the financial institution that I worked for. It was a large one. They had a lot of in-house education and human resource type classes they go to once in a while. And, you know, one of them, I forget what it might have been on listening or something along those lines. And I had a bad habit, and I can still fall into it, that if I'm working on my laptop or on a computer or I'm busy doing something and somebody walks into the room and needs to talk to me or wants to talk to me, that I'll try to keep doing what I'm doing and converse with them at the same time. And I remember there was a guy I worked with, Charlie, and Charlie was probably one of the best programmers I had ever met. And we had another class on workflow and how to make things happen faster. And what you got out of the class was that as hard as we try, we can't do two things at once, at least physically. You know, maybe chew gum and walk if you want to consider that physical, but we can't do two things at the same time. And so if we focus on one thing and see it through to completion, then we'll get more things completed than if we start working on something, drop it, start working on something else, drop it, start working on a third thing and drop it, and then drop that third thing to go back to the first and then finish that, and then maybe we get to the second. I mean, how many of us have projects around our houses that we've started and never completed? I know I have a few. And so the idea that you finish what you start before you keep going. And so going back to the other class about listening, I've tried to get into the habit where if somebody needs my attention, and that means just walking into the room, if they've walked in with the purpose of talking to me, then that's the intention, that I stop whatever it is that I'm doing and have that conversation with them or listen to what it is that they have to say. And sometimes that's all they're looking for, is just for somebody to listen. We talked about this, you know, turning our will and our lives over to the care of God. And sometimes we may not be able to do that directly, or we need confirmation that somebody's listening. You know, we may be talking to God, or when I'm talking to somebody else, I'm really talking to God, but I'm talking to that person. And the answer that we get, we may get on our own. It may not come back from that person. I've had conversations with people, and they seem to have a problem. And especially for we men, we want to fix every problem we can. We always know the solution, right? Be the one who want to be the white knight. And, sometimes people are just looking to talk and not get the solution from us, that they want to either come up with the solution themselves, or maybe they do trust in God. And that so many times, just by voicing an issue, we get the answer. And I think one of the places that comes into play is especially in prayer. You know, Jesus says, pray without ceasing. What's that mean? It means that we talk to God on a regular basis, on a frequent basis. You know, more than just in the morning when we get up and before we go to bed at night. More than, you know, even in throwing in daily mass, it should be, you know, all throughout the day, hopefully, and that we do get answers to those prayers. And if we're, you know, we give God, tell God, you know, what's going on in our lives, even though we know that He already knows it, a lot of times just by putting words around it, vocalizing it, saying out loud or thinking it, allows the mind to turn, allows us to open our hearts and souls to get a solution from God. And sometimes it'll come directly, and maybe you've got the gift where you hear it audibly. Maybe you have a gift like I do every once in a while where you'll just have the words written on your heart or written on your soul, and you instinctively know that that's the right answer. Or what happens in a lot of cases is we do hear it from other people, and it may not be the person that we're talking to directly. It could be something that somebody else says and they don't even realize that they're providing an answer to an issue that we're struggling with. So, do you love Jesus? If Jesus asked you 3 times, would you tell Him that you loved Him? Are you willing to lay down your life for Him? Are you willing to lay down your life for one of His other children? And that doesn't mean that we're going to be crucified or murdered or have to die today. It means that ourselves, right, our egos, our pride, and all that other nonsense may need to take a little break and be knocked down a peg and be martyred a little bit in order for us to help somebody else today. So once again, on this Wednesday, I can't thank you enough for whatever part of the past couple hours you were able to spend with us. As always, if you've missed a part of a show or want to re-listen to a show or pass it along to others, go to our website at inhissign.com and click on content and then podcast. The recordings are out there. You can go ahead and share them with other folks. Today's show and the shows for the last week will hopefully be up by tomorrow afternoon. So I want to thank you again for being with me today. And looking forward to being with you again next Wednesday. Remember, Father McKay will be back in the 4 o'clock hour. He's here on the 5th Wednesdays of the month, so 3 or 4 times a year he should be with us. And that will include next Wednesday in the 5 o'clock hour. Since it is the last Wednesday of the month, Peter DePalma should be here for another installment of Divine Will Wednesday. And we'll talk about Louisa Picaretta and the gift of the divine will. Until then, take care. God bless.